Today we're talking with Dr. Pam Popper, my favorite naturopath. She's an internationally recognized expert on nutrition, medicine, and health, and she's the executive director of the Wellness Forum in Columbus, Ohio. And we're going to ask her a little bit about more what she does, but she was part of the Dr. T. Colin Campbell's teaching team at E. Cornell, and she was featured in the very popular film, Forks Over Knives. And she has a new book out, which is, Dr. Popper, what is the name of your new book?
It's Food Over Medicine, and it'll be out on June 11th. So you can actually pre-order it on Amazon now, but the books will be in people's hands in mid-June.
Oh, I cannot wait to see this.
Thank you.
So I have a million questions for you. I could always talk to you for hours and hours because you are literally a walking encyclopedia of wisdom. I completely have seen that time and time again. I've interviewed you several times over the years, and I just am always impressed with all the information you have. But today I thought, you know, I'm getting a lot of information, a lot of questions, a lot of concerns, and a lot of clients coming to me with all sorts of digestive problems and gastrointestinal disease and inflammatory bowel disease and allergies, a lot of food allergies. And who knows the most about this? Well, of course you do. So I thought we would talk today about some different topics that we're hearing a lot about, and I'm sure you can provide your wisdom and help get people, you know, going in the right direction. So
absolutely, absolutely. And of course, we can add to that long list things like ulcers and reflux and diarrhea and constipation. And my gosh, who knew eating was so stressful, right?
I know, it's true. It is. For many people, it's more stressful than others. I've seen some very sick people lately, and it's really disconcerting. Have you noticed an increase in incidence of these different GI disorders?
Yes, and I've noticed it for two reasons. First of all, because there are many, many more people than ever before who are afflicted with this kind of thing, and then we've gotten pretty good at addressing it at the Wellness Forum, so I think maybe a disproportionate number of them end up on our doorstep. But I had an interesting experience I'll share with you that might let you know, not in specific terms, but just how pervasive this is. I was giving a lecture on a variety of health topics, one of which we were going to touch on was digestive disorders. And I started that section by saying, some of you might be curious to know whether or not you actually have a digestive disorder. And so here's my criteria. When you eat, you should be able to digest your food and properly eliminate, and you shouldn't be thinking about it at all. It shouldn't cause you pain, discomfort, concern, symptoms. So if from the time food enters your mouth until you have a bowel movement, you're experiencing anything other than just living your life, then you probably have something going on that needs to make you pay attention. And you get to see the looks on people's faces. It's like, oh, my gosh, that's all of us.
Oh, yeah, because, like, probably I can't even tell you the last person that has not had or has had that experience and has had no symptoms with eating,
right.
Whether it's just bloating or discomfort or pain or, I mean, it's true. I rarely see people that have that situation where it's easy and effortless.
Right. And
so what's going on? Yeah.
Well, the reason for it is that I think that all of these digestive disorders are a natural response. That's your body saying, you're not feeding me properly. And as long as you continue to aggravate me in this way, I will continue to act up and make you feel miserable. And hopefully if I do that enough, you'll realize that the food is making me miserable. So this is just when the body is when you're uncomfortable, when you're in pain, this is a natural response to something being wrong. And of course, if you watch television at all, you'll see an ad about every 15 minutes for some type of acid blocker or something to relieve reflux or something to relieve constipation or diarrhea. So what's happened is people think that these are symptoms to be ignored and covered up with something that you take rather than thinking, gosh, I must be doing something wrong. Maybe I should be looking into that.
Right, and ironically, every time you go to the doctor to address these issues, instead of asking what they eat ever, that's not even a question that comes up, instead they just prescribe one of those medications.
Right, and that's not, we can't just beat up on the gastroenterologist. This the same thing is true any time you go to a doctor. The unfortunate thing in medical training, and my training as a naturopath was actually just as inadequate in this area, is that so much of training is really how to mitigate symptoms, not to look for and solve all the causes of disease. And so obviously if we can get to the root cause, which is the food, we solve it there, then you can get rid of the immediate problem and you can keep other bad things from happening too.
What a concept.
Yeah. And you would think by now it would have caught on.
I know. I mean, it really is a holistic approach that is lacking. And I'm hoping that people like you are going to help integrate that into the more public, you know, just the desire for it so that when they go to their physicians, at least the patients can bring that concept to them. And hopefully, ideally, in the medical system, doctors and dietitians are going to be more prone to thinking about these things instead.
Well, it's getting better, and people are learning from their patients. In fact, when people ask me, what can we do to change the system? I tell them one of the best things you can do is be the first person your doctor's ever seen fix one of these problems. There are two problems. The training is lacking, but the other thing is that being fair to doctors, they don't see very many people getting well, and some of them do say, well, you know, if you ate better, your diabetes would go away or whatever, but nobody really knows what that means. The people can't do it. So, you know, if you're looking at a doctor who's been in practice for 30 years and he's never seen anybody reverse disease, you can understand how this person may not be so geeked up about this idea or so confident that it'll work. So I think many times the members at the Wellness Forum end up educating their doctors by just showing a good example. You know, I used to be sick and now I'm not anymore and this is how I did it. And for some people, there are some good healthcare professionals out there that are willing to open their eyes and take a look at something. We get calls from them almost every day.
That's true, and I've actually heard that story recently several times. I've been hearing that more and more of people going to their physician and changing their diet on their own and showing the doctor that it can be done, and they're like, okay, keep doing what you're doing, and it does inspire the doctor to pursue more of an education in that diet process and with the changes that they've made. So I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, so things are hopeful out there, so we just have to get some more people to know what to do.
So let's start with that. What do you recommend? Like, what do you believe? And I mean, we all know what your answer might be, but I would love to hear you say exactly what you think the optimal diet for specifically digestion is.
Well, you know what's really cool about all this is that I think a lot of people, probably on the outside looking in, think that a place like the Wellness Forum must have like 60 different diets. You can then tell us what you've got, and then we pull that diet out of the drawer and show it to you. The good news is that the diet that causes high cholesterol, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes is also the same type of diet that causes a lot of these GI disorders. So that's why when you fix one problem, you keep others from happening. So, you know, I always tell people, if you're in my office because you're constipated, I'm so glad we're talking about that, because isn't that a whole lot more cool than talking about having a stroke, right? So let's count our lucky stars here. So the basic diet that helps with digestion is a whole foods, plant-based diet, where the four major food groups are fruit, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes. We make sure there's no dairy in the diet, really defat it, get rid of all those oils. And one of the reasons why this is really helpful, for particularly for people who are constipated, which is an epidemic in our country, is that the diet ends up being really high in fiber. In fact, people tell us all the time that this diet is a moving experience once they start. So, and then lots of good fresh water, you know, 64 ounces of water every day. And what happens is that usually a lot of things clear up, I mean, including reflux and constipation and that sort of thing, with those changes. Now, when we get into more serious conditions, like inflammatory bowel diseases, which I have a lot of experience with, we sometimes have to do a little bit more restriction than that, and the diet has to be phased in a little bit differently. But essentially, that concept of eating a whole foods, plant-based diet, low in fat and high in fiber, is the key to making your digestive tract happy and getting it to stop bothering you all the time.
It really is like the one-size-fits-all diet out there.
Yeah. So that's all good news.
It is great news. But let's talk about the more serious ones like IBD, because I'm seeing more and more of that with my clients, and I'd love to hear what differences you do with their diet. Like, how do you integrate that? What are the nuances?
Well, the first thing is that people with these conditions need to also eliminate high-gluten foods. And the high-gluten foods that have to go are barley, rye, oats, and wheat. And people are a little horrified at that, but that's not so hard to do anymore. I mean, you can buy gluten-free oats in every grocery store, and there are lots of gluten-free products. I always tell people that you're going to find out you have lots of friends out there when you start down this this path.
Right.
So we get rid of the high gluten foods and dairy. Absolutely, I recommend that everybody get rid of it from the diet. But these people have to be ultra careful about it. Low in fat, and then we have to start with because some of these people, when I see them for the first time, their systems are so aggravated and irritated that we start with very, very few foods, a very narrow repertoire of foods, all cooked, and we just tame the inflammation. And once we get to the place, there are ways to know if you've gotten the inflammation under control. And once you do, then you can start to expand the food horizons a little bit, gradually incorporating some additional foods in the diet and adding raw foods. And over a period of time, that person with Crohn's or colitis will eat a diet, much like the one that you and I eat. They will just continue to eliminate, keep out of the diet those high gluten foods. And of course, we use some very specific stepped-up probiotics to help restore the beneficial bacteria in the GI tract that's been destroyed as a result of all the inflammation and having the disease. So it's a little trickier, and you have to be really careful if you're a person suffering from one of these conditions that you don't just jump off the cliff and eat a plant-based diet and wonder why things aren't getting better, because you just can't eat big salads and bean soup and expect to get better if you're in that constant irritated, inflamed state that most people are when they have these diseases. The good news is at the end, these people never have to deal with it again. I have several of them that work with me at the Wellness Forum who originally came because of these kinds of conditions, and they have no symptoms, haven't had them for years, and that's a pretty predictable result.
It's amazing because the patients that I see, you know, they're coming to me on massive doses of immunosuppressants and, you know, steroids and horrific medications that are traumatizing to the body in the long run. So it's like, it's so sad to start from that place, and that's how traditional medicine is treating them, when really they have to, you know, if you can have a high cure rate by changing the diet, that's so much more extraordinary in so many ways.
Well, the problem is that this is, again, not taught in school. And the other thing that aggravates it is if you go to the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation Association's website, it is full of misconceptions about this. It even has one, I'm paraphrasing here because it's been a while since I saw it, but it indicates that if anybody with these diseases out there thinks that it has anything to do with diet, they're probably imagining it because eating is so uncomfortable. And then recommends, you know, eating lots of cheese and white bread and just everything that we know that triggers the disease. So you've got a lot of misperceptions out there about the origin of the disease. And then people really don't understand the heinous side effects of these drugs, nor do they understand when they start down that path that the drugs only work for a certain period of time and then you have to move on to the next one. And when all of that is, you can't take steroids for your entire life, you can't take immunosuppressants. So the next step is to just start removing the GI tract of these people in pieces or entirely. There was a story in the front page of the Columbus newspaper just a week ago about a bodybuilder who had won the Arnold Classic. We're a big bodybuilding town here in Columbus, believe it or not. And they showed a picture of him having won the bodybuilding championship. And, of course, you and I know how he did it with egg whites and whey protein.
Right.
And then he got very sick and he had with ulcerative colitis and had his entire GI tract removed. And of course, that was unnecessary. And the result of just having reached the end of the road on the treatment. So much better thing is to identify the cause and fix it. And I will say one thing I love about treating and working with people who have these conditions is that they generally want to get better and they do everything you say. So they're the most compliant people we work with in this field, which I love.
Because they feel better.
Oh, yeah. Well, they want to feel better. They're desperate to feel better. And I've always said, you know, if we could make the not yet sick and the mildly sick people pay attention the way the really sick people do, then we could solve this healthcare problem in America really quickly.
Oh, that's so true. I keep getting these lately. I've been getting a lot of, like, emails. Hey, I've got my friend or my relative or my loved one has stage 4 metastatic cancer. We're ready to change their diet. It's like,
yeah, why couldn't we do it before we
right?
got to that stage?
It's just so, it's so tragic. So, and you talked about these associations on the website saying, oh, it's just in your imagination if you think it's a food. Now, personally, having experienced irritable bowel syndrome my entire 20 years of my life, not knowing what it was, and having doctors tell me, oh, it's in your mind, it's depression, it's blah, 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 it's kind of like the write-off disease. What do you say about irritable bowel syndrome?
Well, irritable bowel syndrome is also a result of diet. I would say how you treat it depends on whether or not it trends toward constipation or it trends toward diarrhea. Obviously, when we get a patient with Crohn's or colitis, if they're bleeding out and having 20 bowel movements before noon every day, your approach is going to be different than for somebody who has a bowel movement every 3 or 4 days. So most of the irritable bowel folks trend a little bit more toward constipation, and it's amazing if they start drinking enough water and eating this high-fiber diet that we recommend here, how fast that clears up. And if they need some additional help, prune juice and dates and figs and high-fiber fruit, sometimes we'll get things moving. And if that doesn't work, we can do what's called a vitamin C flush, which you really should do that with some supervision. But really high-dose vitamin C will almost always get the bowels to move if you're giving people high enough doses of it. And then once the bowels start to move, things get better from there. A couple of things happen. Sometimes people who are chronically constipated get, I call it almost addicted to laxatives, where they don't have bowel movements unless they make a laxative. And so those people sometimes suffer from a lazy bowel. You've got to literally retrain it. But my first choice is prune juice, and I had a person tell me one time, it's kind of funny, she said, I don't know if it's the prune juice that made my bowels move or the horror at the thought that I might have to continue to have the prune juice that made my bowels move, but it really
did
work.
Oh, I have fond memories of my mom making me sit there with a cup of prune juice. Oh, it's so disgusting.
Yeah, well, you can bury it in a smoothie. We know some better things to do with it these days, but it really does get things moving. And
oh, that's a good idea, put it in a smoothie.
Now, if it trends toward diarrhea, and this is just a tip that anybody can use in a situation where they have diarrhea, even if it's flu-related or you just picked up some bug somewhere, is brown rice is a really good food for cleaning up diarrhea.
And then everyone always says that it stops everything.
But it does. That's the key, is if you're one of those people that's trending a little more toward the diarrhea, have some rice 3 times a day, and you'd be surprised how fast that clears up.
What about bananas? I've always heard bananas too.
Yeah, it depends. They can work both ways. I don't let my my IBD folks have bananas in the beginning, but I don't mind letting the irritable bowel people try them. They're a little less critical. Not to discount the discomfort that they're
having. Of course. No, but they're not bleeding and on steroids.
And they're also not, you know, some of the people that I've seen have had so much trouble with malabsorption that they've literally been malnourished for years, so it's a little bit more serious situation. But
The
bananas can work different ways in different people, and of course, it always depends on how many of them you eat, too.
right. So, what do you think about how individualized people are in terms of their response to changing their diet and to different foods?
Well, I think that the differences may have a little bit to do with the condition. For example, if you're one of those people with high cholesterol, that's your problem. We really don't have to talk much about gluten restriction or eating more cooked food. I mean, you can just adopt a whole foods plant-based diet and pretty much eat what you please from the bottom of our food pyramid. You know, we have a little design that shows people what to eat. People with some conditions, you know, I'm not shy about additional fat restriction for older patients who have serious coronary artery disease, and I'm not shy about the gluten restriction for people with inflammatory bowel diseases. But the bottom line is, I think there's a lot of hype out there about different diets for different people based on your blood type or your metabolic type, or, you know, there's always some special thing about some group of people. And, you know, people are remarkably the same. And you have health care. And I don't mean to offend them. I mean, we tell everybody, well, you're special to us because you're here. But the bottom line is that health care training, and you and I have both been through a lot of it, it's based on the fact that everybody's body operates pretty much the same way. I mean, you know, it really is based on that. And with few exceptions, that's the case. So I think we make way too much out of that kind of thing. And mostly that type of idea is promoted by some folks who I don't think base their recommendations much on the science.
Interesting response. Okay. So let's talk a little bit. You mentioned before probiotics, and I think that's a really hot topic. And what I've seen, it looks like it's really in its infancy in terms of, you know, finding the perfect prescriptions and all that. But tell me your opinion and your experience using probiotics to help treat your patients.
Well, I've been doing a lot of research on this lately because I'm getting ready to teach a monstrous course on autoimmune diseases, and probiotics play a role with those as well. The bottom line is that we have an epidemic of people who have impaired populations of beneficial bacteria, and there are a number of reasons for it, starting with the fact that we do so many cesarean births in this country. And you might be wondering, well, what the heck could that possibly have to do with beneficial bacteria in the gut? Well, the way babies acquire their beneficial bacteria is through vaginal birth. Mm-hmm. And if they're not vaginally born, then they acquire it from the hospital environment. Well, that's not probably the best way to do it.
Right.
And then, of course, formula feeding is a way that we avoid populating the GI tract properly. A lot of babies are formula fed. Breast milk has a much higher concentration of bifidobacterium. And I even identified some studies just recently showing that the health of the mother, including weight of the mother, can influence the concentration of bifidobacterium in the breast milk. So we start in childhood, you know, infancy, actually.
In the womb, yeah, and even in the womb.
Having a disadvantage. And so, and of course, then we know that there are many things that people can do in the course of their lifetime to impact these populations too, and that includes taking antibiotics, birth control pills, steroid pills, constipation, inflammatory bowel disease, celiac disease. These are all things that can impair those populations, and it points to a whole lot of people out there needing to take probiotics. I think the key is that probiotics need to be prescribed properly, and here's why I say that. For example, a lot of combination probiotic products contain prebiotics, things like fructooligosaccharides or inulin, and these are great, but when you've got somebody who's suffering from gas and bloating, these tend to bloat people more. And so you never want to recommend one of those products when you first start treating with probiotics. And you also have to be careful because prebiotics are fertilizers, that you're not fertilizing the bad stuff. So
right.
You want to postpone the introduction of those prebiotics until later. So I think that there are a lot of people trying to, you know, go to the store and buy products, and it's a good attempt, but I think you're better off working with a practitioner. And there are some really great companies out there that only offer their products through practitioners because they want to make sure that they're used properly. And so that's always the route that I encourage people to take. But you really can't recover from the types of conditions that you and I have been talking about unless you're going to use some probiotics. And a great example, and I'm sure you've seen this too, is the number of people who've been diagnosed with celiac and became really diligent about making sure they were eating no gluten foods. I mean, not just the big four, the highest concentration gluten foods, but they're not eating any gluten at all. And here they are, you know, 3, 4, 5 years later, and they're really not feeling any better. They're not eating the gluten, and they're maybe not as uncomfortable as they used to be, but they're certainly not healthy. And the reason is because the elimination of the gluten is only part of it. You got to fix the damage that's been done to that poor, abused, inflamed intestinal tract, and the only way to do that is probiotics.
Interesting. Interesting. So, and do you think it's more like disease-specific the way you prescribe?
Yeah, absolutely, because I have people that, in fact, some people, for example, the Crohn's and colitis sufferers, we don't put them on probiotics at the very beginning. And the reason is that they really need to focus on getting the inflammation down. First of all, I don't want them wasting money on stuff that can't help them in the beginning. And the other thing is I don't want them anything aggravating the GI tract. And probiotics can be a tiny bit irritating for some people. So I think you do need some clinical judgment involved in the proper use of probiotics.
Can you address, I think, one of the most popular, I don't know how to say it, but it's just so popular nowadays. Everyone's talking about leaky gut, and I think it's just completely confusing to a lot of people, and it's been misinterpreted, and I would love to hear your take on leaky gut.
Well, first of all, it's a real condition, and it is one of the biggest contributing factors, major contributing factor to the development of autoimmune diseases, because when your barrier system stops keeping things that shouldn't get into your bloodstream from doing so, you run the risk of the body creating antibodies to food particles, and it kind of goes beyond the conversation that we're having right now. We'll save that for the next time we do this, but the bottom line is it's a real condition, and it leads to real problems. The problem is what to do about it. First of all, making sure that we're not diagnosing everybody with it. I mean, I have many criticisms of my naturopathic colleagues, but one of them is that they find out about a condition that affects some people, and they automatically sometimes assume it affects everybody. everybody. So not everybody has leaky gut, but some people do. The way that you fix it is you, first of all, clean up the diet so that you're not aggravating the GI tract. Again, it's the inflammation that comes from eating irritating foods. You know, animal foods, dairy foods, meat and beef and chicken and all those kinds of things that people eat lots of, they have sulfur-containing amino acids which irritate the lining of the colon, and that's that type of thing is one of the contributing factors to leaky gut. So you got to stop irritating the gut, and then again probiotics, and you can eventually restore the integrity of the mucosal lining and the beneficial bacteria. That's the good news about the body is it's an incredibly complicated machine that actually responds well to being repaired. You know, so if we do the right things, we can fix this.
What about sugar? Everyone kinds of, the first thing people associate with leaky gut is sugar.
Well, I think the problem, I'm not for eating sugar. I think people eat too much of it. But I think that we're always looking for angels and demons.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
You know, you've got people saying, you know, blueberries are magical foods. And my gosh, if you just eat blueberries, you're going to reduce your risk of cancer. Well, you know,
right.
People who try to eat blueberries every day and they gain 10 pounds and their lupus gets worse and they say, blueberries don't work, you know.
Right.
There aren't enough blueberries on the planet to overcome the way people eat. They're looking for a demon. The reason why we have our health problems is because of high fructose corn syrup or sugar. And I've said many times, if you take, for example, the average teenage kid and you stripped out all of the corn syrup from the foods that they're eating and nothing else changed, they'd be just as overweight and sick because the rest of the diet's so deranged. That, you know, we really have to focus on dietary pattern. There isn't a single food that makes all this bad stuff happen, and there isn't a single food that rescues us from it either. You have to really pay attention to the dietary pattern.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I agree 100%. I love that. We're always looking for angels and demons. That sums it all up.
Yeah, somebody wrote a great book of that title. I wish they hadn't taken it because I could write a nutrition book titled Angels and Demons.
Oh, I know you should. I'm going to retitle it and play with it a little bit. But okay, well, Dr. Popper, you are just filled with absolute wisdom. Let's go out with your top tips that you would recommend for ideal gastrointestinal health overall.
Okay. Well, first of all, drink enough water every day because water allows the fiber in the food to expand, and that creates peristalsis, which, you know, really promotes good bowel movements. So make sure you're drinking 64 ounces of clean, filtered water every day.
You just say 64, 5-4 or 6-4?
6-4.
So eight-ounce glasses,
glasses. Yeah, and then when it's 90 degrees and the Midwest and we're running 10 miles on a summer day, you probably want to make that a little more than 8 glasses of water.
You're in your two-hour hot yoga class that you love to do.
Yeah.
So sweating away.
Make sure you're hydrated, and then choose your foods from the four major food groups. Everything after this is a condiment. You know, so I want people to eat a lot of legumes and whole grains and vegetables and fruit and potatoes and corn, and you know, so that's what you want to make your meals from. And you can't mess it up if you keep the oils out. You know, people add a lot of fat and that kind of thing to these great, fabulous meals, and they spoil them that way. But you know, if you keep the added fats out and you really just focus on eating various combinations of those foods, and you've got some great recipes on your website and your book, and there are great recipes and a lot of the Forks Over Knives cookbook, lots of resources for this. That's what you want to eat. And I tell people, don't make it so complicated. I even find people thinking that, you know, sometimes somebody called me one day and said, is there something wrong with me? Sometimes I feel like having vegetable wraps for breakfast. I said, that's not a disease. Go on ahead. Let yourself go.
That's not a disease.
Yeah, and if you want to have cereal for dinner, that's okay too. You know, we have some strange ideas about the times to eat food in this country. So just eat those kinds of foods and eat as much as you want. You know, that's the other thing. Get away from portion control.
What? What do you mean?
Yeah, you cannot mess this up. If you're eating the type of diet that you and I live on, the fiber content of the food will keep you from overeating. So you can just eat with careless abandon and enjoy food. You know, a lot of people, either because of their weight problems or because they've had so many digestive problems, they've really forgotten how to enjoy food. And food is fabulous and to be enjoyed. So you can kind of go back to enjoying eating and enjoying the things that you're eating. So that's my best advice.
That is incredible advice, and what a concept to love eating and not be afraid of it, because a lot of people that are suffering are afraid of food, and it's really kind of a sad place to be because we have to eat. We have
right.
to eat to survive.
Exactly, exactly.
But that was very helpful and very optimistic, and I can't thank you enough for spending time with us today.
Well, you are so welcome, and I hope we get a chance to do it again soon.
Me too. Thank you, Dr. Popper. Take care.
Thank you.